Good morning. It's good to be with all of you. I can't believe that Asher turns 2 tomorrow. That's one of the numbers he can say, so he knows what's going on. I've said this before, but I deeply, deeply appreciate the way that so many of you guys have reached out to Asher and give him attention. And it's one of those things that not every kid in the world gets to have, because not every kid in the world grows up in a church that loves people. And so there's so many of you guys that have just helped form him, to help him become the kind of kid that he's becoming and help him to know some of the things that he knows. A lot of you guys have taught him things, and I think all of that's just really cool and really special. I want to ask you guys a question this morning. Have you ever felt like there was a period in your life where you didn't understand God? Maybe it was circumstances in your life where you didn't understand why God was allowing the things to happen in your life that were happening. Maybe it was the circumstances in a friend's life where you saw somebody suffering and they were sick, they were not doing well with their health, or some situation like that that you just couldn't comprehend. Maybe for you it was a time where you read something in the Bible that was hard to swallow, and you didn't really like what it was saying, and you couldn't understand why God would ever say the thing that he said in that passage that you had been reading. Sometimes when it comes to not fully understanding God, or understanding all the reasons for the things that God allows or has said, we can sometimes think that if I'm going to really believe in God and really serve him faithfully, I first have to have answers to all of those questions. And until I get answers to all of those questions, then I'm not really going to serve him. Turn your Bibles to the book of Habakkuk. And we're going to take a look at a prophet who is dealing with that kind of thing. For a time now, I've wanted to look at an entire book of the Bible in one sermon, and this is a shorter book of the Bible. I've been wanting to do this with some of the shorter books, and just have us look at it section by section and make a few comments at every point. And depending on how this lesson goes, I want to do this perhaps with some other books like Nahum and Titus and some of those other ones. But I want you to imagine that you lived a few thousand years ago, during the time of Habakkuk. In this time period, you're living in the southern nation of Judah, and your people are not doing well as a nation. In fact, one of the greatest kings you've ever had, Josiah, just recently died. And he went out to battle, and he seemed to have some pride as he went out to battle, and he dies by Pharaoh Necho. And you're not understanding why all these things are happening. And what we have in the book of Habakkuk is not the prophet speaking to the people like it is in most of the prophets. In this prophetic book, we've got Habakkuk very puzzled by the circumstances with the nation of Israel, and we get to like peer into this dialogue that he's having with God. So he's asking God questions, God is responding to him, he's responding to the way that God responded to him, so on and so forth. So we get to look into this divine conversation that this prophet's having with God. Let's go ahead and look at Habakkuk. And chapter 1, verse 1 to chapter 2, verse 1 shows you Habakkuk's complaints. Let's start out with the first 4 verses, though. This is his first complaint to God. The oracle that Habakkuk the prophet saw: O Lord, how long shall I cry for help, and you will not hear? Or cry to you violence, and you will not save? Why do you make me see iniquity, and why do you idly look at wrong? Destruction and violence are before me, strife and contention arise, so the law is paralyzed, and justice never goes forth. For the wicked surround the righteous, so justice goes forth perverted. In these first 4 verses, you might have noticed that Habakkuk asks 2 questions. The second question that he asks is in verse 3, and he says, "Why, O Lord? Why? Why what?" Habakkuk is looking at the immoral state of the nation, and he sees different things that's going on. There's a lot of violence in the nation. People are killing each other. There's blood on the hands of fellow Israelites because they're murdering one another. He says that in this section that there's no justice, which means that the political leaders of the day are lining their pockets so that they don't have to exercise justice in the nation. Habakkuk's looking at this situation, all of this violence, and the law seems like it's paralyzed. The people who are supposed to be enforcing the law aren't doing a thing about it. And Habakkuk is asking why God is allowing all these things to continue. But look at the first question that he asks in verse 2. Habakkuk says, "How long shall I cry to you and you not hear?" Not only are things morally corrupt in his nation, but he keeps like bleeding his heart out before God and asking God, "What are you going to do about this? Why aren't you doing anything about it?" And he says to God, "I've been pouring my heart out to you, and you don't seem to be doing one thing about this situation. God, you seem indifferent." You ever felt that same way? Or maybe there was something going on in your life. Or maybe you look out at the politicians, or maybe you look out at the state of the nation, and you go, "Why, God, are you allowing all of this stuff to happen? And I feel like I'm praying about it, and I'm praying about it, but nothing's being done about it." Did you notice in this text that this isn't just like the prophet looking out at a secular nation? This is the prophet looking out at God's people who have been given the law, which is why he says the law has been paralyzed. You ever looked at people who claim to be Christians and thought to yourself, "God, why are you allowing these people to say one thing about you but not live like they're supposed to be serving you like they would confess?" You ever looked at another Christian and gone, "God, why are you allowing this person to do such wickedness to me with the way that they're treating me?" Habakkuk can't explain all of these things. You know what's interesting is that these kinds of questions are asked by other people throughout the Bible. In Revelation 6, we've got the saints that are under the altar, and they're saying, "God, how long until you vindicate us?" In Zechariah chapter 1, verse 12, there are angels that are asking God the same question. You know what's interesting with Habakkuk is that he sees these things taking place, but he doesn't say what a lot of religious people today would say. Habakkuk doesn't say, "Well, everything happens for a reason, so roll with the punches." Habakkuk says in this, "God, this should not be happening. And I'm trying to understand why you're allowing all of it to take place." By the way, this is one of the arguments people use against God, isn't it? How can a good, loving, just God allow all the wickedness in the world to exist? And for some people, they say, "Well, that's the reason I don't serve God. Because God's just inexplicable to me. I don't understand Him." What's Habakkuk doing here? He's praying. He's not using this as an excuse to flee from God. He's using this as a reason for him to go to God and express his raw emotions to him. Can we tell God how we really feel when we go to him in prayer? Look at God's response in chapter 1, verses 5 through 11. "Look among the nations and see, wonder and be astounded, for I am doing a work in your days that you would not believe if told. For behold, I am raising up the Chaldeans, that bitter and hasty nation, who march through the breadth of the earth to seize dwellings not their own. They are dreaded and fearsome. Their justice and dignity go forth from themselves. Their horses are swifter than leopards, more fierce than the evening wolves. Their horsemen press proudly on. Their horsemen come from afar. They fly like an eagle, swift to devour. They all come for violence, all their faces forward. They gather captives like sand. At kings they scoff, and at rulers they laugh. They laugh at every fortress, for they pile up earth and take it. Then they sweep by like the wind and go on, guilty men whose own God is their might." It's interesting that Habakkuk's prayer, when he says all of these things to God, does it rouse God up to finally do something, or has he already been acting? He's already been doing something. But God tells Habakkuk, "All right, you wouldn't even believe what I'm going to do if I was to tell you." Well, what is it that God's going to do? God's going to take care of this problem with the nation, and justice is going to come not from the people who are supposed to enforce the law within the nation of Israel, but justice is going to come from the Chaldeans. There's the bombshell. Chaldeans are the same thing as the Babylonians. And so Habakkuk has been saying, "God, why aren't you doing anything? Why aren't you doing anything?" And then God says, "Well, this is what I'm doing." And look at how this nation is described in this text. In verses 6 and 7, they're described as bitter and hasty. You ever known a bitter person who was slow? Well, you can kind of see it coming. Well, these people are bitter and they're quick. And they're coming for you guys. In verse 9, it says that they can scoop up sand like they scoop up captives. You ever gone to the beach and you scoop up some sand in your hand? How hard is that for you to do that? Probably not very hard. And so in like manner, the Babylonians just kind of come from city to city and they scoop up captives and they put chains around their neck and they bring them to their different cities. In verse 11, these people are described as having God be their own God is their might. Well, what do these people worship? They worship themselves and they think that they're awesome. Is that a problem for people in our world today? They think they're indestructible. You know, it's interesting how God can sometimes work in very unexpected ways. Habakkuk comes to God probably with a preconceived idea of how he thinks God should answer his prayers. And then God says, I am working, and I'm going to use this terrible nation to destroy the nation of Judah. Who would have ever expected God to do that? Who would have ever expected God to use the Roman army to destroy Jerusalem again in 70 AD? Who would have ever expected the Savior of the world to be crucified on a cross? I'm learning from this, we learn from this, that when God answers Habakkuk's prayer, that we can't go to God assuming that we know how He should act. God knows what He's doing, and His ways are far above our ways. But look at Habakkuk's second complaint. Look at chapter 1, verse 12, to chapter 2, verse 1. Are you not from everlasting, O Lord my God, my Holy One? We shall not die. O Lord, you have ordained them as a judgment, and you, O Rock, have established them for reproof. You who are purer of our eyes than to see evil and cannot look at wrong, why do you idly look at traitors and remain silent when the wicked swallows up the man more righteous than he? You make mankind like the fish of the sea, like the crawling things that have no ruler. He brings all of them up with the hook. He drags them out with his net. He gathers them in his dragnet. So he rejoices and is glad, referring to Babylon. Verse 16, therefore he sacrifices to his net and makes offerings to his dragnet. For by them he lives in luxury and his food is rich. Is he then to keep on emptying his net and mercilessly killing nations forever? I will take my stand at my watchpost and station myself on the tower and look out to see what he will say to me and what I will answer concerning my complaint. Isn't it interesting what happens here with Habakkuk? His first complaint is, God, you're not working. You're not doing anything. And once he's told that God is working, his second complaint is, I don't like how you're working. Look what he does. He goes back to God's character. God, you are from everlasting. God, your eyes cannot look on anything that's impure. You're a perfect and righteous God. How can you take a nation more corrupt than ours and use it to destroy our nation? If you're such a perfect God, why can you do that? It'd be like us today saying, God, how could you wipe out America with ISIS? It would be shocking to all of us that that would ever be the thing that would happen. Now, you might look at this and think, well, geez, it seems like Habakkuk is going a little bit too far in his emotions with God. Because he's saying, God, this is who you are. I know who you are, but I can't reconcile with how you're dealing with this situation. How do these things fit together? Now, again, there's different ways that people would respond to this seeming contradiction. Some people would say, I can't explain God, so I'm done with Him. Because I want everything to fit in a nice little box that I make it out to be. And since I can't explain God, that's kind of intimidating to me. So I'm going to serve something like my own strength, because I can understand that. But Habakkuk, in chapter 2, verse 1, he's not going too far in his prayer. Because he says in 2:1, basically, God, I've said my piece, and I'm going to wait for you to correct me. You notice how he's going to God in prayer? I'll sit at my watchpost. I've said what's on my mind, but now, God, I'm open and humble to receiving any correction you want to give to me. Can you go to God when you don't understand things and tell him how you feel? And then say, God, please correct anything that I'm saying that's wrong. Please reveal to me. Please help me understand where I'm missing it. That's what Habakkuk does. Those are his two complaints. But in chapter 2, starting in verse 20, we're going to get Habakkuk seeing a vision from God. And this chapter is divided into two main sections. God's answer to Habakkuk is, yes, I'm using the Babylonians to destroy Israel, but some of the Israelites will be saved. I will show mercy. And then secondly, I will judge the Babylonians after they've judged you. Let's start out with the first part. Verses 2 to 4, the righteous who are going to live. And the Lord answered me, write the vision, make it plain on tablets, so he may run who reads it. For still the vision awaits its appointed time. It hastens to the end. It will not lie. If it seems slow, wait for it. It will surely come. It will not delay. Behold, his soul is puffed up. It is not upright within him. But the righteous shall live by his faith. You notice in verse 2 that God's telling Habakkuk, I want you to write these things down on tablets. I would assume that they would have been stone tablets. But God wants him to make it plain, make the writing big. For what reason? So that anybody can come up to Habakkuk's tablets that he's written on and see exactly what's going to happen, that the Babylonians are going to come and judge us. And so that as soon as they see that, they can flee. Kind of like what Jesus said in Matthew 24, when you see the Romans coming, I want you to flee to the mountains. And so that same kind of thing is said there. But notice that Habakkuk is told there's going to be people within the Israelites that are going to hear that this judgment's coming and their soul's going to be puffed up and they're not going to believe that the judgment's going to happen. Those are going to be the ones that are swept away in their judgment. By the way, are there people today that say things like, well, God hasn't judged the world yet, and it's been around for a few thousand years, so I'm just not sure that it's ever going to happen. So when preachers and teachers and Christians say things like, there's a coming judgment, I just don't think it's going to happen, your soul's puffed up, is what Habakkuk is saying here. But who's going to live? In verse 4, the righteous people are the ones that live by faith. They're the ones that believe whatever God says, no matter how much it doesn't make sense to them. We'll say more about that at the end of the lesson. But look what happens in verses 5 to 20. He deals with the wicked who are going to be judged. And this gets subdivided to, first of all, people who have greed and arrogance in verses 5 to 17. Before I read this, though, look how a lot of these verses start. Or look at some of the words that are in a lot of these verses. Like in 2:6, he says, woe. In verse 9, he says, woe. In verse 12, 15, 19, they all begin with the word woe. You know what the word woe meant in the ancient world? It was a term that was used at funerals. And so when somebody had died, they said woe to that person because they have died. So what Habakkuk is doing is he's saying with regards to the Babylonians, or what God is telling Habakkuk is, woe to these people because this is the way they live. Indeed, Habakkuk, you are right. They are a wicked people. And God's going to give them their funeral. Look at how these people are described in verses 5 to 17. Moreover, wine is a traitor, an arrogant man who never is at rest. His greed is as wide as Sheol. Like death, he has never enough. He gathers for himself all nations and collects as his own peoples. Shall not all these take up their taunt against him with scoffing and riddles for him and say, woe to him who heaps up what is not his own for how long and loads himself with pledges? Will not your debtors suddenly arise and those awake who will make you tremble? Then you will be spoil for them. Because you have plundered many nations, all the remnant of the peoples shall plunder you, for the blood of man and violence to the earth, to cities and all who dwell in them. Woe to him who gets evil gain for his house, to set his nest on high, to be safe from the reach of harm. You have devised shame for your house by cutting off many peoples. You have forfeited your life. For the stone will cry out from the wall, and the beam from the woodwork respond. Woe to him who builds a town with blood and founds a city on iniquity. Behold, it is not from the Lord of hosts that peoples labor merely for fire, and nations weary themselves for nothing. For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. Woe to him who makes his neighbors drink. You pour out your wrath and make them drunk in order to gaze at their nakedness. You will have your fill of shame instead of glory. Drink yourself and show your uncircumcision. The cup of the Lord's right hand will come around to you, and utter shame will come upon your glory. The violence done to Lebanon will overwhelm you, as will the destruction of the beast that terrified them. For the blood of man and violence to the earth, to cities and all who dwell in them. You notice in verse 5 that these people are pictured as being greedy and arrogant. And as I read through all of this, you might have seen the ways that they demonstrated their greed. You know, it's sad when possessions can be used to demonstrate love for other people, but these people flip it around and they love possessions and use people to get them. So in this text, they're building their cities off of the blood of people. They're building their houses at the destruction of other people. They're causing other people to drink. They're being violent towards other people. In verse 5 again, look at how their greed is described. It's as wide as Sheol. You know what Sheol is? That's the grave. It's death. I don't know if you've ever seen movies where the Grim Reaper is in it. But like you got the Grim Reaper and he's got that thing that he uses to grimly reap people with, whatever it's called, the sickle, that thing. Have you ever seen in a movie where the Grim Reaper is like pictured and the Grim Reaper finally says, okay, I've had enough. No, he always wants more. In like manner, these people that are greedy, they're never satisfied with what they have. They can have all the things that everybody in the world would ever want, and it's still not enough for them. And in all that process, they're continuing to hurt other people. Now, that's how the Babylonians are described. Look at verse 14. In verse 14, judgment's going to happen, and the result of judgment is that the earth will be filled with the glory of the Lord. Do you remember when God brought the Israelites through the Red Sea, how the people in Canaan felt about God? They trembled and quaked before Him. When God sends judgment on this nation, everybody's going to know who the Lord is, and they're all going to glorify Him because of that. Did you notice verse 17, one of the reasons the Babylonians are going to be judged? It says because of the harm that they did to animals. You ever noticed that before in Habakkuk 2:17? These people had even misused animals for their own personal gain. And God has noted every single thing that they've done. You think that would start to become comforting for Habakkuk? God, how can you use these people to destroy us? And God says, they're going to be destroyed. Don't you worry. And they're first of all described as greedy, but notice that they're also described as idolaters in verses 18 to 20. What profit is an idol when its maker has shaped it, a metal image, a teacher of lies? For its maker trusts in his own creation when he makes speechless idols. Woe to him who says to a wooden thing, awake, to a silent stone, arise. Can this teach? Behold, it is overlaid with gold and silver, and there is no breath at all in it. But the Lord is in his temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. These people were said to worship their own might earlier. And here we learn that they worship idols. Now try to imagine what those idols would have looked like. They would have taken a piece of wood and they would have carved it out to look like some ornate, nice little guy thing, whatever it was. And then they would have like put gold and silver over it. It would have just looked like a very, very precious little item. And it says regarding those idols, they don't have any breath in them. They can't speak. You try to say to the stone, arise, and it can't do anything. This is picturing what it looks like to worship anything other than God. You make anything other than God your God. And you greedily try to absorb all the blessings of this world. And listen to all of these idols that say, go after these things, go after those things. And they tell you exactly what you want to hear. Your God has no strength. And it will be judged. And by way of contrast in verse 20, you've got God who does have breath in Him. And He's in His holy temple and everybody's supposed to keep silent before Him. When people worship their idols, they would scream and they would repeat their words over and over again with the hopes that the gods would hear them. And with the true God, you'd be silent before Him. His judgment's coming. Habakkuk, you rest assured that all of these things that you don't understand, God is doing something about it. With the things in your life that you've had a hard time understanding, when you look at all the evil in the world, you might not know right now how it's all going to turn out, but you can be rest assured that God is acting and He's going to do something about all this wickedness in the world. And so because he gets this answer from God, he ends this book with a prayer. That's chapter 3. Now notice what happens in this prayer and how it's kind of structured. Look at verse 1, Habakkuk 3:1. It says, a prayer of Habakkuk the prophet according to Shigionoth. What's a Shigionoth? That's like a lament put to music. Go down to the very last part in verse 19. Look at how it ends. To the choir master with stringed instruments. You see what's happening here? Did you know that within the book of Habakkuk, we have a psalm embedded within the book? And so we see that at the beginning and the end of this chapter. But what's the basic request that Habakkuk is making? Look at verse 2. O Lord, I have heard the report of you and your work. O Lord, do I fear? In the midst of the years, revive it. In the midst of the years, make it known. In wrath, remember mercy. He says in this prayer, all right, God, I want you to revive the work that you do. And you're going to send the judgment, but in your judgment, please, God, remember this one thing. Remember mercy. You notice that Habakkuk does not say, God, when you send the Babylonians to judge us, please remember the good works that I've done. Please remember some of the people that we have converted throughout the past, like Moses' father-in-law and Rahab and some of those people. He doesn't say any of that. By the way, when judgment comes one day, what are you going to plead to God for? God, please remember all the good things I've done. No. God, please remember mercy. Please remember that. And he bases this request off of things that God has done in the past. Look at verses 3 to 15. God came from Teman, and the Holy One from Mount Paran, Selah. His splendor covered the heavens, and the earth was full of His praise. His brightness was like the light. Rays flashed from His hand, and there He veiled His power. Before Him went pestilence, and plague followed at His heels. He stood and measured the earth. He looked and shook the nations, then the eternal mountains were scattered, and the everlasting hills sank low. His were the everlasting ways. I saw the tents of Cushan in affliction. The curtains of the land in Midian did tremble. Was your wrath against the rivers, O Lord? Was your anger against the rivers, or your indignation against the sea, when you rode on your horses on your chariot of salvation? You stripped the sheath from your bow, calling for many arrows, Selah. You split the earth with rivers. The mountains saw you and writhed. The raging waters swept on. The deep gave forth its voice. It lifted its hands on high. The sun and moon stood still in their place at the light of your arrows as they sped at the flash of your glittering spear. You marched through the earth in fury. You threshed the nation in anger. You went out for the salvation of your people, for the salvation of your anointed. You crushed the head of the house of the wicked, laying him bare from thigh to neck, Selah. You pierced with his own arrows the heads of his warriors. You came like a whirlwind to scatter me, rejoicing as if to devour the poor in secret. You trampled the sea with your horses, the surging of mighty waters. You notice in this text that Habakkuk remembers the past victories of God. He remembers them taking through the Red Sea in the time of Exodus in verse 11. He remembers when God made the sun stand still in the book of Joshua. Look at verse 14. God takes the arrows of the enemies and he uses them against themselves. You remember Haman? Who builds these gallows to have Mordecai hung and then it gets used against himself. You remember other battles like with the Midianites in the book of Judges where they start destroying each other? Habakkuk is remembering the kinds of deliverances God has given in the past right after he asks for mercy. God, please show us mercy. I know you've done these kinds of things in the past. You ever look at prayers like this in the Bible and thought to yourself, I do not praise God the way I ought to? Here, Habakkuk is just remembering all the great things about God, including his splendor in verse 4. In verse 4, he talks about when God's glory came to Mount Sinai. I think it's a reference to Mount Sinai. You remember when there was the earthquake and the lightning and everything like that? He says in verse 4 that it was God just veiling his power. It was a lampshade of his glory. But it wasn't all of it. In verse 13, he remembers that God has saved his people in the past, and he's trusting that God will save his people in the future. How does Habakkuk pray? God, I'm scared right now. I don't know how things are going to turn out. But I do know this about you. I know that you've been with us in the past and you've helped us in these ways. And so therefore, I trust that whatever you're doing, you're going to work out for good. That's his prayer. Because he remembers what God's done in the past. What has God done in your past? All of us are alive right now. Because we're here. The Grim Reaper hasn't reaped you yet. We're here, and God has blessed us with the health that we have to be here right now. He's given us food every day to be here right now. When we face things in the future that we don't know how it's going to turn out, we have a God who's protected us all of our lives up to this point. Look at what happens at the end of this, though. Verses 16 to 19 are some of the most impressive verses in all the Bible about trust. Look at verse 16. I hear and my body trembles. My lips quiver at the sound. Rottenness enters into my bones. My legs tremble beneath me. Yet I will quietly wait for the day of trouble to come upon the people who invade us. Habakkuk says in this prayer, yes, God, I'm afraid. You've said that judgment's going to come. I'm terrified. If somebody said to you, in 5 years, America's going to be decimated, we'd be afraid. We'd tremble at that. But let's see what he says in 17 and 18. Though the fig tree should not blossom, nor fruit be on the vines, the produce of the olive fail, and the fields yield no food, the flock be cut off from the fold, and there be no herd in the stalls. What's Habakkuk saying? God, I understand that the banks are going to be closed. I understand that the grocery stores aren't going to have any food in it. I understand that when I drive past the farms, there's not going to be anything that's growing on the vines. There's not going to be any trees that are growing anything in it. I understand that's going to happen, God, and I'm scared. Now, if you knew that was going to be what would happen, and maybe you feel like that's what's happening in your life right now, things around me are crumbling. I don't understand why my life is in the place that it's at. How do you react to that? Look at the last verse of the book. Look at verse 19. Yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will take joy in the God of my salvation. In the God, the Lord is my strength. He makes my feet like the deer's. He makes me tread on my high places. This is an amazing profession of faith. Habakkuk doesn't need everything in his country or everything in his external circumstances to be in a certain way for him to have joy. He says, the joy that I have comes from the Lord. You know why people in the world that have nothing, and it just seems like everything crumbles around them all the time. Do you know why folks like that can have joy? It's because their joy is not tied up in things that pull away from us. Their joy is tied up in a great God who has tremendous strength, and if we know Him, nothing can take that joy away from us. Habakkuk 2:4 said that the righteous would live by faith. At the end of this book, Habakkuk is demonstrating what true faith looks like. And by the way, Habakkuk 2:4 is quoted three times in the New Testament. I'm going to show you two of them as we conclude this lesson. In Romans 1:16 and 17, Paul says, "For I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith for faith, as it is written, the righteous shall live by faith." What is this saying? That God has brought this gospel into the world that nobody could have ever guessed would have been what He would have done through the cross. Because there was a bitter and hasty and greedy man named Judas who handed Jesus over to a bitter and hasty nation, the Romans, and they crucified Him. And through that we have salvation. What kind of people are saved? The kind of people who believe that even when it doesn't fully make sense to them. Here's another time that this is quoted in the New Testament, though. Hebrews 10:38 and 39. "But my righteous one shall live by faith, and if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. But we are not of those who shrink back and are destroyed, but of those who have faith and preserve their souls." In Hebrews, you've got a group of people that are just getting beat down, and they might not be able to explain why they're being mistreated as they're serving God. Maybe that's the circumstance in your life. Habakkuk is quoted in Hebrews to say, the righteous person lives by faith, and that kind of faith perseveres no matter what circumstances happen in your life. People start seizing your property, like what's happening to this audience. No matter what crumbles around you, the true Christian is the one that has faith that perseveres no matter what happens. That's the book of Habakkuk. Is that the kind of trust that you have? Do you have a trust in God even when you can't fully explain everything that's happening in your life? If you need any help this morning, this is an opportunity to receive that help while we sing, "'Tis so sweet to trust in Jesus." You can please stand.